From the halls of every school in Michigan, this is School Talks on 760 WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy. Sponsored by Wakely Associates, Plant Moran Real Point, Collins and Plaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, Clark Construction, and by Must Construction Careers. Now, take your seats. Class is in session. Here's Robert.
Welcome to School Talks. As part of our continued focus on apprenticeships and opportunities for students, we're joined this week by Dan McKiernan, the Communications Director for the Operating Engineers Local 324. We're also joined by Brad Pierce, the Outreach Specialist for the Ironworkers Local 25, and from the Painters and Allied Trades Local Union 2353, Training Director Sean O'Neill. All this and more coming up. This is School Talks on 760 WJR.
This is School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy.
Joining us now, we have Dan McKiernan, the Communications Director for the Operating Engineers Local 324. Welcome to the program, Dan.
Thanks for having me.
So let's start right out of the gate. We need to share with our School Talks listeners that I was your high school teacher some 30 plus years ago.
You didn't have to mention the number, but yeah, that's absolutely true.
So talk about a full circle moment here. And it's nice to have you on the program and see that you're doing so well. And I'd like to think that my English instruction maybe had something to do with it. I don't know, but nonetheless.
Absolutely.
So let's start with, on a serious note, what is an operating engineer? And what do members of your union do as an operating engineer?
So that's probably the most, popular question we get asked. Operating engineers, we say, we keep Michigan running. That's because we are the operators of the heavy equipment that you see on all major construction projects throughout the entire state. We represent 15,000 members from Monroe to Marquette and all points in between. We also represent the technicians or mechanics who work on the heavy equipment, and also stationary engineers that are in buildings working on boilers and HVAC units.
So with respect to the heavy equipment, what types of projects do the engineers in your local typically work on in this area?
If you can see a piece of construction equipment on it, that's something we're working on. Obviously, in the last few years particularly, roads and bridges is paramount. Mm-hmm. We know the work that's been needed to get our roads and bridges revitalized. But everything from the Gordie Howe Bridge, which sure. had hundreds of our members working on it, the Hudson Site Tower, just looking out the window here at the WJR studios, we can see Henry Ford Hospital having expansions built. We've got operators out there. Mm-hmm. So if it's a school, a factory, a road, a bridge, a pipeline, the energy grid, mm-hmm. Solar and wind farms, if it's got heavy equipment, we're out there doing it.
That's just a fantastic description of what the union does. I don't remember the year exactly, but I remember as a kid when they were building the General Motors plant in Lake Orion, mm-hmm. my brother and my dad and I went out there, and they had, I was a kid that grew up with Tonka trucks, and they had trucks out there with the tires that seemed like they were 12 feet high, hauling dirt. And
there are ones that do have tires yeah. that large and larger.
Yeah, just amazing when you think about it through that lens, as opposed to a term like operating engineer. So let's talk a little bit about the apprenticeship program that's available for students. And how does the apprenticeship program work for prospective students coming into the local?
Sure. So, we right now have the largest number of apprentices we've had in our history, over 500 apprentices, which is a testament to the amount of work that's going on and how much that next generation of skilled workforce is needed. We say that if you're interested in working with your hands, or you like working outdoors, a career in the trades is something you should really look into. And we certainly have an unprecedented amount of interest in our programs right now. We have a 560-acre training facility out in Howell, and we just put a $25 million expansion into that with an indoor arena, so we can, train year-round indoors and outdoors. And all we ask for prospective apprentices coming in is that they have the desire to learn. They don't have to have any experience in construction, but they have the desire and the want to work in this industry and to learn all that they can, because we're certainly going to give them plenty to learn over the course of their, you know, 3 years in the case of an operator, 4 years for a technician or a stationary engineer. Mm-hmm.
And just for full clarification, there are no qualifications or certifications required to join, because you end up getting that in the apprenticeship program.
Yeah, you have to have a driver's license. We do require a work keys test score,
okay.
Which is you can get it either in your high school or from a Michigan Works office. But no, you don't have to have any experience at all in construction or certainly in heavy equipment to mm-hmm. enter as an apprentice.
So the facility in Howell is really a practice facility, right?
And we call it, you know, it's a sandbox because we've got the biggest toys.
And I imagine you're constantly using it for different things, whether you're training someone on a backhoe or a plow. I don't know all the different types of equipment, but it really is the sort of the playground to learn how to use all this stuff.
Absolutely. And that's really the thing is, you know, we have four facilities throughout the state. We have one in Gladstone on the Upper Peninsula. We have one in Grand Rapids. Here in Detroit, we have a stationary engineer center. But our construction career center in Howell, that 560 acres, we teach everything. We have courses for, you know, bulldozers and excavators. Like I said, we have that indoor arena now that just opened last month that, you know, is almost 100,000 square feet of indoor space. We have a tower crane out there. You know, we've put that investment in ourselves. We know that training is what keeps us the most employable, the safest, best professionals we can be. And so we constantly invest in ourselves and our upgrade training as well as our apprentice training.
Mm-hmm. We're currently with Dan McKernan, the communications director for the Operating Engineers Local 324. Dan, let me follow up on once an apprentice finishes the program, how does the union handle like job assignments and work locations?
Sure. Like other trades that, you know, you'll hear from, we have a hiring hall. Once someone graduates from our apprentice program, they can always go seek their own work. We have plenty of members that will, you know, work for a particular contractor and be asked back again and again over different projects, or as different people move from one contractor to another, might bring certain, you know, a team with them or individuals. But if they don't have that, we have a hiring hall, and the contractors who we partner with so closely will call us and say, we need 5 excavator operators on this project starting on this date, and we will find the best 5 to send to them and make sure that our members are always as employed as possible as many times as necessary.
When you connect that to the incredible boom in construction in the state, it just makes me appreciate how wise it is that you guys have built this sort of playground to practice.
Oh, absolutely.
That gets them ready to do this kind of work. Let me shift gears here. How does Local 324 contribute to the broader community or industry in the area?
Well, we try to be leaders in the industry. That's certainly the case, both, you know, in an advocacy stance, which is we're very aware of, you know, again, talking about roads and bridges. We know probably better than anybody what it's going to take to get the roads and bridges upgraded and fixed and safe for the school buses and you know, things being delivered to your local store and taking your family on vacation. So we're always advocating for better roads and bridges and, you know, new projects. We're advocating for the jobs that those create. And we're also, you know, because 15,000 members throughout the state, we're in pretty much, you'll have an Operating Engineers 324 member in just about any community you can think of. And we're very involved there. We do a lot of charitable work there. We do a lot of fundraising and really try to participate in our communities as much as possible.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask, as an extension of that, what are the long-term career opportunities and sort of potential for advancement for someone in the local in terms of moving up the ladder, so to speak?
Sure. We provide plenty of opportunities, and you'll find that in many of the unionized trades. The first thing, of course, is that there's the professional development part of things where you can become active in your union, become a steward, become a foreman or a craft foreman, and move up to a, you know, superintendent, things like that. The other thing that's huge for us is the professional skills upgrades that we permit because we have that training center, particularly because we're heavy equipment operators. Technology is huge for us. Mm-hmm. You can only imagine how much technology has changed in the equipment on the job site. You know how much it's changed in your car over the last 20 and 30 years. You can imagine, you know, an excavator or a dozer today is probably, you know, a good chance that it's GPS, you know, navigated. So you're using GPS to get within a fraction of an inch of the grade that you want. We're using drones to, you know, survey job sites. There's just so much technology that upgrade training goes everywhere in making sure that we're always staying on top of the next wave that's coming down the pipeline.
And it sure makes you appreciate how much more it is than just digging a hole.
Oh, my God, yes.
When you think, I think about the Gordie Howe Bridge and just an extraordinary effort. Dan McKiernan, the Communications Director for the Operating Engineers Local 324. I want to thank you for stopping by School Talks, and as always, keep up the good work.
Thank you for having us. We appreciate it.
Coming up after the break, we'll chat with Brad Pierce from the Iron Workers Local 25. This is School Talks on 760 WJR.
This is School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy, sponsored by Wakely Associates, Plant Moran, Real Point, Collins and Plaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, Clark Construction, and by Must Construction Careers. Once again at the head of the class, Dr. Livernoy.
Joining us now on the program is Brad Pierce, the Outreach Specialist for the Iron Workers Local 25. Welcome to the program, Brad.
Thank you for having me today.
I appreciate your time stopping by School Talks. This program often is dedicated to helping people understand the various apprenticeships available for students coming out of high school or even people interested in a career transfer. And I'd like you to tell our listeners a little bit about Local 25 and the history in the Detroit area.
Sure. So Iron Workers Local 25 was chartered in 1901. We've built everything from the Mackinac Bridge to the new Gordie Howe Bridge that we're currently working on, Ford Field, Comerica Park. Also, virtually every Meijer, Home Depot, Lowe's. So if it's made out of steel and it's not pipe or sheet metal, we're generally going to be the ones installing it.
What a great description from the Mackinac Bridge to the Gordie Howe Bridge. Specifically, the apprenticeship program your local offers, how does it prepare members for any specialized role in working with structural steel?
Sure. So it's a 4-year long apprenticeship, and we do everything from teaching you how to hook the steel up to the cranes that the crane operators run to welding a building together. How do you put bolts in and know it's torque specified? So it's pretty intense training. We bring in specialists. We have 7 full-time instructors currently at our 2 training facilities. And anything that you could need to know, we try to get you experience in while you're in the training program.
And I understand there are 2 training facilities, one in Wixom and one in Hudsonville. Can you tell us a bit about those centers and how they actually help workers develop hands-on skills?
Sure. So our training centers both have all aspects of ironwork in there, everything from rebar that's in the foundations. So that's kind of where we start everything. Everything starts with a solid foundation. This building we're in, the Fisher Building, has a very deep foundation filled with rebar before the concrete's poured, so we teach them how to tie that. From there, our facility has a 2-story mock-up of exactly a skyscraper, right? Full-story I-beams, like the Hudson site on a smaller scale. So we teach that. We've got over 50 welding booths between our 2 training facilities to ensure that every apprentice comes out as a certified welder. Overhead cranes, we cross-train with the operating engineers in our last class of apprenticeship, where in 5 days, we will fully dismantle and reassemble a 5-story building.
Wow. That's a little more difficult than playing with Legos, I imagine.
Yeah, it's fun. It's giant erector sets.
So as far as recruiting prospective apprentices, does the local partner with any community colleges or organizations to get recruits?
Sure. So That is my full-time job, is to bring in recruits. So we definitely partner with all sorts of organizations. Virtually every state community college that has a welding program we visit, CTE centers have been crucial over the past several years, building relationships with them. But probably our most interesting outreach and recruitment has been working with an organization called Helmets to Hard Hats. Sam Doherty is a state rep there, and he's helped facilitate us working with the Michigan National Guard, securing good jobs for our National Guard members. And we've seen 26 sign up in the past 2 years with us.
And if I recall correctly, doesn't Ferris State have one of the foremost metallurgical or welding programs in the state?
Absolutely, they do. Generally, people go in for a bachelor's degree are probably not looking to weld 500 feet up in the air on multi-story buildings. But yes, our contractors definitely hire out of Ferris State. I know Wayne State University has also started a weld engineering program as well. So we have worked with them.
Much like we've talked with other apprenticeship opportunities in different unions, when you consider the amount of work that's happening in Detroit right now, from the Gordie Howe Bridge to, you mentioned you're responsible for the Mackinac Bridge. It brings me to this point. Not long ago, the Mexican Navy ship hit the Brooklyn Bridge, and it was a horrific tragedy. I think a couple of people died. But if you've ever visited the Brooklyn Bridge and look at the ship that crashed into it, that bridge didn't go anywhere. Just given the amount of iron in that bridge. I've had the opportunity to walk that bridge, and I think about how sturdy it is and how old it is in terms of steel and concrete and all that. Just as an understanding of, you know, many people take for granted driving over a bridge and what it includes and so on. So let me get back to the apprentice opportunities. Once you're in the union and you're working, are there any particular support systems that help people manage the physical demands of this job? Because just your brief description of it, this is some pretty heavy duty work. So how do you help protect your members?
Sure. So we have a slew of benefits, right? Medical through Blue Cross Blue Shield, Delta Dental, Blue Vision. But one of the things too, we know not everybody's going to want to wear the tools for their entire career. So we offer journeyman upgrading classes constantly, whether it's going to be superintendent training. You know, when I do my presentations in the high school, I always talk about everybody's trying to climb the corporate ladder, right? Going up. Well, we're the exact opposite. We're working our way back down to the job site trailer. So how do we do that? We know it's going to be through advanced training, right? So whether it's learning total stations, which is a very up-and-coming layout instrumentation, advanced blueprint reading, superintendent training, cost estimating, go be an estimator on a job. We encourage our members to constantly hone their skills. We know that a combination of in the field work plus some mental training, you can go anywhere with these trades.
Sure. We're currently with Brad Pierce, the outreach specialist for the Ironworkers Local 25. Let me follow up in terms of green energy. I know there's a lot of discussion about this in our culture nowadays. And is Local 25, do you have the opportunity to incorporate renewable energy projects in the work that you do?
So, yeah, it's funny you bring that up. Before I became a member of Ironworkers Local 25, I was a janitor at Wayne State University, and I got into the trade thinking I was going to go build wind turbines, because that is a huge thing that ironworkers build. I live in Detroit, so they build wind turbines out in the middle of nowhere, right? So I didn't get an opportunity. But yes, we definitely train in all aspects of green energy. In fact, Detroit's contractors are going around the country building all the new electrical battery plants as well. So definitely heavily involved in green and renewable energy.
So you mentioned contractors. How does the local collaborate with them to make sure apprentices get placed in jobs and get the necessary experience?
Sure. So every registered apprenticeship with the unions is going to have a joint apprenticeship training committee. And we have a committee made up of contractors as well as union representatives. And that's kind of how we push the training forward, right? The needs of the contractors drive the industry forward. So we work with them. They understand, hey, when they get a brand new apprentice, they might not know much, but through experience and time, it's an investment on the contractor's part. They need a future employee. So they're willing to hire very much so brand new apprentices and ensure that they get the experience. And they're generally not throwing them right up on the steel walk, and they're going to learn the tools, learn to work and communicate before they ever get thrown up in a more risky situation.
And it makes me appreciate the safety and well-being of the workers and the focus you have on that. I think we've all seen that one picture of four guys sitting up on an iron beam eating lunch with zero safety harnesses, and how far we've come in today's world in terms of keeping workers safe. So, Brad Pierce, Outreach Specialist for the Iron Workers Local 25, I want to thank you for your time today, and really a neat window into all the great stuff that the local does in helping continue not only the revitalization of the city, but just the long-term prospect of keeping Michigan the great state that it is. So thanks for joining us, and keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Coming up after the break, we'll chat with Sean O'Neill, the training director for the Painters and Allied Trades Union. Stay right there. This is School Talks on 760 WJR.
School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy.
Joining us now on the program is Sean O'Neill, the training director for the Painters and Allied Trades Local Union 2353. Welcome to the program, Sean.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Thanks. And part of our continued focus on trades and opportunities for students, we've had the opportunity over the past several episodes to talk to different trades. And obviously, painters and allied trades are, I would imagine, a pretty busy group right now, but an important one nonetheless. So I wanted to give you an opportunity to talk a little bit about the union and the opportunities it provides for prospective members. So first and foremost, what would you describe are sort of the core values and priorities for Local 2353, and how does it impact members on a daily basis?
Okay. Yeah, it is worth noting, you know, I am a member of Local 2353, but that is just one local out of nine that make up District Council 1M, and we cover the entire Lower Peninsula of Michigan.
Okay.
But as far as our priorities and values, we continue to advance and maintain better relations between our members and their employers, and to enrich the lives of our members and their families and all other working men and women.
Mm-hmm.
We believe that organization and collective bargaining is necessary to foster and adapt ways and means for a continuous improvement of the working and living standards of the members of District Council 1M.
Sure. So if I'm a student coming out of high school and I'm considering joining the union, how do you support a new member and or an apprentice, not only in learning the trade, but eventually finding work?
Right. Well, the members can contact a business representative, and they can see, you know, the business rep has a better idea of what contractors might be looking for people either immediately or in the near future, and they can kind of place them over to those companies. Members can also solicit their own work through our signatory contractors if they need to. And we have an out-of-work list, so if anyone, whenever they're out of work, in addition to contacting their business rep, they could get on that out of work list. That way, if contractors are calling the hall for they need workers, all the business agents have you know, that list to go off of.
So a business rep really is the conduit between places where your members can go and do work.
Yes.
Fair
yep.
enough. Okay. Aside from doing the work of the union, are there opportunities for your members to get involved in different activities, or I imagine you have committees or different things that happen in the unions?
Yeah, we have different things we do. Something we just recently did was volunteer work at the DBRA Boy Scout Camp in Metamora, Michigan. We do that every year. I don't even know how long it's been going on for, but I've been in with the Painters and Allied Trade since 2000, and it wasn't new then. Recently, we had a Tiger Day at Tiger Stadium. The council bought 200 tickets that we distributed to the members to go see a Tiger game, kind of giving back to our members. We have a STAR program where through our negotiated wage and benefit package, everyone puts in a certain amount, and we have a picnic at the end of the year for if they attended so many like upgrade training classes classes or safety training classes, and prizes are given out, and all the money that was in it, you know, is dispersed through prizes and gifts and stuff like that.
So, interesting question. You said you took a group to a Tiger game at Comerica Park. I have to think, Comerica Park was built in 2000, 2001. And I have to think of all the your members who went to this event at Tiger Stadium or Comerica Park. There were probably some who actually did some of the painting there.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure there were.
When you think about all the green paint in the stadium,
right?
I just think about the connection to that. Because many people, as I'm sure you know in the business, anywhere you go, there is evidence of skilled trades right in front of you across areas you might not even realize.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just an extraordinary opportunity to understand what goes into, you know, creating a building from scratch. So so let's talk a little bit about the apprenticeship program. What does it look like, and what are the expectations, especially for a new apprentice coming in the program?
Okay. Well, for starters, the apprenticeship program, any journeyman upgrade classes that we offer, and any cost for certifications are all self-funded through our wage and benefit package. So we don't take any tax money, like from the state or federal government, like on a regular basis. We might apply for a grant here or there, but nothing consistent. And none of the apprentices or anybody have any student loan debt when they're done. We have, obviously, like I mentioned earlier, painters, drywall finishers, and glazers. Those are all three separate apprenticeship programs. The paint and glazing are a four-year program, and the drywall is a three-year. And they're expected to come to one four-hour class one night a week, like a regular school year from September through May. And the apprentices are expected to attend their classes every week and, you know, be working out in the field, show up for work, try as best as they can to be productive and learn as much as they can from on-the-job training, you know, things like that.
So as an extension of that, how does the union ensure ongoing professional development for an experienced member of your union? You mentioned, you know, the opportunities for apprentices. What is sort of the ongoing stuff for people in the business?
Right. Well, in the apprenticeship program, we teach them, you know, everything they need to know about their trade, along with how to do it safely. We have that STAR program that's kind of an incentive program for our journey workers to come in and keep up on their training, their safety certifications and stuff like that. And, yeah, that's pretty much how we do that.
So we're currently with Sean O'Neill, the training director for the Painters and Allied Trades Local Union 2353. So, Sean, let me ask you, what are some of the benefits offered to your union members when they come into the union?
Yeah, well, right when they come in, whether they're an apprentice or a journey person, they have health care, dental, vision, a pension that's a defined benefit pension, an annuity, and some of the locals have also, in addition, have vacation pay, along with apprenticeship and journeyman upgrade training.
And I imagine you have a pretty strong focus on workplace safety and training.
Yes.
I think about, you know, just painting, whether you're on a scaffold or anything you want to share there in terms of how the union continually promotes that safety in the work environment?
Yeah. Well, one thing is any member can contact their business representative to report like an unsafe working condition out in the field if they're encountering that. And the business representative can then, you know, help them out to remedy that situation. And we offer different safety training classes throughout the year, you know, different subjects, whether it be scaffold or CPR, first aid or fall protection, that type of thing.
Sure. Off the top of your head, here we sit in the Fisher Building downtown in Detroit. Could you point to two or three major projects that your locals involve with somewhere downtown right now? Anything off the top of your head?
Like the Hudson Tower, you know, our organization has been on that. The train station, we've worked on that.
Sure.
Just a couple off the top of my head.
Yeah, and, you know, the reason I asked that question is, given how much attention the city has gotten in its revitalization, I think about how important the skilled trades have been.
Absolutely.
In making all of that happen. Because those are not, this isn't like painting a half bath, right?
Right. No, it's major projects with all different types of substrates.
Exactly.
Different safety factors to take into account, whether it's you're working at heights or with the products you're working with, if there's any specific health hazards that might come along with that.
Yeah, for sure. So Sean O'Neill, Training Director for the Painters and Allied Trades Local Union 2353, I appreciate you stopping by School Talks, and most importantly, shining a light on the apprenticeship opportunities for students if they choose that career path. As always, keep up the good work, and I appreciate your time today.
All right. Thank you for having me on.
When we come back, I'd like to share some thoughts with you about the number of open manufacturing jobs, not only in Michigan, but across the country, and how the people we interviewed today are part of the solution going forward. Stay right there. This is School Talks on 760 WJR.
Talks on WJR is sponsored by Wakely Associates, Plant Moran, Real Point, Collins and Plaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, Clark Construction, and by Must Construction Careers. Now let's get back to class. Once again, your host, former Superintendent Dr. Robert Livernoy.
Welcome back to School Talks. Our discussion today with the ironworkers, the operating engineers, and the painters and tradespeople really shines a light on the shortage of manufacturing employees to do the work in the country. In fact, the landscape of manufacturing employment in the United States right now really is a story of opportunity and an extremely difficult challenge. As of March 2025, a couple of months ago, there were approximately 449,000 open manufacturing jobs nationwide, and that's according to the National Association of Manufacturers. And this figure underscores the persistent demand for skilled workers in a sector that really remains a backbone of the American economy. Consider these facts. With 449,000 job openings, that's a slight increase from 445,000 in February. The number, though, is part of a broader trend. The U.S. economy as a whole had 7.2 million job openings in March, with manufacturing representing a significant and stable share of that. The job openings rate for manufacturing stood at about 3.4%, indicating that for every 100 positions, about 3 to 4 were unfilled at any given time. These openings are split between durable goods, which is about 313,000 jobs, and non-durable goods, which is about 136,000 jobs. This truly reflects the diversity of manufacturing, from automotive and aerospace to food processing and pharmaceuticals, all of which are supported by the backbone of the union people that we have been interviewing on our show. So, why are there so many openings? Well, first and foremost, there is a skills gap. Many positions require specialized technical skills or certifications, which the current labor pool does not always provide. Second, demographics. An aging workforce means more retirements, with not enough younger workers entering the field to replace them. Third, an economic growth. As manufacturing output increases, so does the demand for labor, especially in advanced manufacturing and automation. And finally, one that's not talked about too often is there seems to be a geographic mismatch where some regions have more jobs than available workers, while others have higher unemployment but fewer manufacturing opportunities. Now, from a Michigan perspective, as you know well, Michigan historically has been the heart of American manufacturing, especially in automotive, and it mirrors and magnifies the national trends that we're talking about. An example, the Midwest region, which includes Michigan, had 1.678 million total job openings across all industries this past March, with a job openings rate of 4.7%. Michigan consistently ranks among the top states for manufacturing employment and job postings, particularly in automotive, aerospace, and advanced manufacturing. And in Michigan, manufacturing roles range from engineers and technicians to machine operators and quality control specialists, which too is anchored by the very unions we've been talking to on this program. So what is the impact and implications of this high number of open manufacturing jobs? What does it really mean? Well, first of all, the economic impact is extraordinary. Manufacturing remains a major economic driver, contributing nearly $3 trillion annually to the U.S. economy. Wages and benefits. The average manufacturing employee earned over $100,000 in 2023, including benefits, making these jobs attractive for many workers. Future demand. By 2033, the U.S. is projected to need an additional 3.8 million manufacturing workers, further intensifying the competition for talent. Now, as far as the achievement gap goes, there are a number of efforts underway that are attempting to close this gap, one of which is the incredible work that's going on in our public schools. Many, many times on this program, we have showcased the great career and technical education programs operating across our great state. And with the leadership from the Michigan Department of Education and all of the intermediate school districts, career and technical education is a high priority and is a fundamental solution to closing this gap in the workforce as we look ahead to the future. Another is the outreach to underrepresented groups, encouraging women, minorities, and veterans to enter manufacturing careers. And finally, another way to close the gap in this workforce is through automation and technology. And while automation can reduce some labor needs, it also creates new, higher-skilled jobs that require ongoing training. So when you package this all together, the number of open manufacturing jobs in the United States, and particularly in Michigan, remains high, reflecting both the vitality of the sector and the challenges it faces in attracting and retaining skilled workers. For job seekers, this represents a wealth of opportunity. For employers and policymakers, it continues to be a call to action to invest in education, training, and workforce development to ensure that American manufacturing remains globally competitive well into the future. And that has been a consistent mission of mine here on School Talks, showcasing the number of career and technical education programs in our school districts, as well as the many opportunities for apprenticeships through MUST Construction Careers. So when you package it all together, the future is bright, but we have to continue a laser focus on closing this gap. And that's all the time we have for today. And as always, remember, there are two ways to spell one and three ways to spell two. Till next time, this has been School Talks on 760 WJR.